Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith Podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. I took a little break in December, but I'm back and ready for a whole new set of episodes along that theme, vocational ministry. Before we get to the episode, I want to take a moment to let you know that the countdown to the release of my new book, How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife, has begun. This book is both personal and practical. I share my story of over two decades in ministry, including the times my husband served on a large multi-staff church, our season of church planting, and my current role as a lead pastor's wife. I also share the mistakes I've made, the lessons I've learned, and the biblical truths that have sustained me. There are both how-tos and whys sprinkled all throughout. I wrote this book with any and all church and ministry contexts in mind, so while it's not prescriptive, it's highly practical. At least that was my goal in writing it for you. The book releases March 1st and is available now for pre-order. In the past, I've done launch teams for my book releases, but I've decided this time to streamline the process and not have a launch team. I simply hope and pray you'll read the book, find it helpful, and want to share it with other women in ministry. Word of mouth is most effective anyway, and a share or two on social media from someone who resonated with your book, it makes an author's day, y'all. So I'll be sharing about a few other resources and ways you can share about the book in the coming weeks right here on By Faith, so stay tuned for that. Okay, friends, let's get to the interview. My guest today is Kay Geiger. Kay's husband, Eric, is the lead pastor at Mariners Church in Orange County, California. Kay has a deep passion for pastors' wives and pastors' kids, which you will hear about in our conversation today. Kay joined me to talk about the relationships among pastors and elders' wives on the same church staff. We touch on a number of things that you may find helpful in this conversation, things like conflict, COVID-related differences of opinion, loneliness that pastors' wives experience, building trust among pastors' wives, feelings of wanting to quit, expectations and the role of the pastor's wife, the importance of unity among staff and wives, and how Kay is especially passionate about helping pastors' kids love Jesus and his church. This episode is full and rich. So here, friends, is my conversation with Kay Geiger. Well, I'm excited to get to welcome Kay Geiger to By Faith today. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
I'm excited to get to talk to you. I got your name recommended to me as somebody who's extremely passionate about serving other pastors' wives, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So I'm really excited.
I am excited too.
Can you maybe introduce yourself? Tell us about your family. Tell us where you are. Anything you want us to know about you.
Sure. Eric and I have the awesome privilege of serving Mariners Church in Orange County, California. We've been here for about 3.5 years, and we have two daughters. We have Eden, who is in eighth grade. She just turned 14. And we have Evie, who is in sixth grade, and she just turned 12. And we're not from here. We both grew up in Louisiana. And so this is, you know, major culture change, but we absolutely love it.
Yeah. Southern California is probably a little nicer than hot Louisiana.
It's a little nicer than everywhere, I think. It's pretty darn amazing.
Which is probably why all the house prices are astronomical and everyone wants to be there.
Yeah, you pay for the sunshine for sure. But man, it's been a great place to experience a pandemic. I'll put it that way. Lots to do outside. So yes. That's nice. Yeah.
And y'all were in Nashville before, correct?
We were. We were in Nashville for 7 years and then we moved here.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Tell me you when we talked by email about this, you said that you were really passionate about several things, one being other pastors' wives. And I'd love to know how that developed for you.
You know, I think it developed just because I have always been one since Eric and I were married. I did not think I would marry a pastor. I don't think I know any pastor's wife that says, I knew I was going to marry a pastor. None of us really think that. Maybe that's our justification of how we don't always do it well. But I really thought if you line up a million women, I'm going to be at the very end of ones who would marry a pastor. but I did feel called to ministry, which I know everyone who ends up marrying a pastor doesn't. And I did feel called to ministry my freshman year in college, but I had no idea what it meant. I grew up in a small church, and I don't remember a lot about my pastor's wife, except for that she wore culottes and no makeup and drank Tab. And I thought, I don't like Tab. Do you remember Tab?
Yes. It's okay. Kind of like Dr. Pepper, but it's Dr. Pepper.
but yucky. Yeah, it's not good. And I thought, you know, I want to wear makeup and I don't play the piano. And like, I just don't fit the only mold I knew, mold I knew.
Right.
And so Eric and I got married in college, Christine. I was 18. I was almost 19. I was a junior, but I had started college young, but wow. I was 1 month away from being 19. We kept that a secret from our children until they could do math, but now they know. And so we've actually been married for 25 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So when Eric was already serving at a church, we were in college as a youth pastor. Mm-hmm. And I was a volunteer in that ministry before we were ever dating. And so our entire marriage has been ministry. And I really didn't know what that meant. I grew up in an amazing family, but I didn't grow up in a ministry family. And so I didn't have anyone to really walk beside me in that way. And I wanted it. I wanted it for as long as I can remember. I wanted that. Thankfully, we have it now, but I didn't have it when I was young and probably needed it the most. And so it wasn't until a few years later, we were serving on a quite large church in Florida, that I developed some relationships. Eric was executive pastor there. And I developed some relationships with other pastors' wives. And I realized what a gift it was. Yeah. Like it's something I had been missing, and just the camaraderie of it. I'm a teacher by trade. And one thing I love about teaching is the camaraderie with other teachers. It's mm-hmm. more fun to work and serve with people that you love. And that is kind of where my passion started. Like I started having this thought of, gosh, if we enjoyed each other more, if we knew each other even, then I think ministry would be so much more fun. Yeah. And so that's really kind of how it started.
That's great. And so are you talking about there were pastors' wives on staff, or it was your yep. church, all of them, their husbands were on staff, and you were the executive pastor's wife. So did you kind of have the ability to gather people?
You know, I didn't know if I did or not, to be mm-hmm. honest. I mean, when we moved there, I was 25, Eric was 27. We were really young.
Okay.
And so it felt like I have no right to lead this group when I have no idea what I'm doing. And so, but what I did know is it was a church that was growing very quickly. So we had a pretty young staff. And so I thought, well, we need this. So I went to our senior pastor's wife, who was more of an introvert. And I said, hey, I want to do this. And I'd love for you to do it with me. You can do as much or as little as you want, but I want to do it. And I kind of went knowing that she might say, I don't want you to do it. But I felt like she wouldn't, because there was no real reason that she would say that. So I went more of it with the posture of, I want to do it, and I want you to be a part. And she said, okay. And she did attend sometimes, but not often. And we started meeting once a month. And as our staff grew, we just kept, inviting women in. And you know what we learned is that we really loved each other. You know, there was this bond of like, we're very different, but we had something in common that bonded us. And so we bought, Jesus being number one, but number two being that all of our husbands were pastors, and we were all trying to figure out how do we act? How do I act? What do I do? What's my responsibility? What's expected of me? All the things.
Right.
That was really the first pastor's wife group I was a part of.
That's awesome.
That's been a long time ago now. Yeah.
I asked specifically about your role because I think a lot of women, they're on staff, or I always say that, you know what I mean? We all know what we
yep.
mean. We're not
yep.
the person on staff, but they're staff wives, mm-hmm. but they're not the senior pastor's wife. And so they're afraid sometimes to kind of take the lead. Like they don't want to overstep. They don't know.
It is a tricky thing.
Yeah. What would you say to them?
I think I would say, looking back, I'm not sure that if I had been older and, when you're young, you don't know to fear things. You don't know to think, oh, that might not go well. You know, you just think, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And so I think holding on to a little bit of that, of if it's a passion and you believe that it's a healthy thing for you, the other women, your staff in general, your church in general, then I say you go for it. I think you have to do it in a respectful way, but you go to, you know, maybe that I would say probably, you know, I think we tend to think it's the senior pastor's wife's thing, but that's not really true. For a lot of these ladies, they're not passionate about it. They just don't want to do it. They're maybe introverts and it's just not, they're not comfortable. So there's a possibility that they would even be grateful to you for saying, hey, I'll head it up. I'll do it. You know, you come when you want to, you do whatever you want to be a part, but I'll lead the charge. So I think that more times than not, it's more of a fear of what the answer is going to be and not what the answer actually is. So I say, just go for it. And I've heard this a lot of times, and I think that more times than not, the senior pastor's wife will say, I don't have time. It's not my passion. It's not the way I'm built, you know, what any of those things, but you go for it. And so I think if you're having a burden to do it, that you go talk to her, I tell her you want to include her and any way she wants, any way at all she wants. And then, but that you have a burden to do this and then you do it.
Yeah. And I like that too, because what you're saying, because for me as a lead pastor's wife, sometimes we can hear about other lead pastor's wives really being passionate about and doing these things. We almost feel responsible, but exactly. you're saying be free. You know, you as a lead pastor's wife may not have that personality or that gifting or passion, but you know, maybe if someone else does support and champion that, but you don't have to necessarily do it yourself.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I think it's really a barometer of your humility. You know, if you're willing, if you are a senior pastor's wife and you're like, I think our women do need this. I don't want to do it. Having the humility to step back and say, I'm going to let one of these other ladies who is passionate and would do amazing, I'm going to let her lead it and I'm going to support her and encourage her and do anything I can, but I'm going to let her do that. Mm-hmm. So as a senior pastor's wife, I think that would be your response. I think as another pastor's wife on staff who wants it, but isn't getting it, I think that just going to the senior pastor's wife and saying, hey, I have a burden for this. And I'd love for you to partner with me or not, you know, but you know, do you have your blessing to go forward? And I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say that their senior pastor's wife said no, you know, and if they did, I would kind of push back like, okay, well, can you tell me why? Maybe there's a history there that didn't go well. Or you know, there's a lot of things it could be, but without assuming that the answer is going to be no, you know, I say, give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we keep talking about it, what you're doing, these things and gathering and all that. So let's talk about what you do. How do you, I have two kind of questions about that. How do you serve your fellow pastor's wives?
Okay.
How do you connect them? So we can start with the serving. How do you serve?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. So this is, like I said, been a passion for mine. Moving here 3.5 years ago. I'll just speak to this environment that we're in now.
Okay.
It's looked a little different places that we've been, but I think I'll just speak to this one. But moving here, we have a pretty large staff. And so I guess I kind of assumed all the staff wives would know each other. Mm-hmm. That you should never assume that. It is not true. So I thought, well, it'd be so much fun if I connect these ladies, but more than anything, I really want them to feel loved. I want them to know we love them. We cherish them. We're grateful for the position they're in. We're grateful for the way they serve our church. So we started meeting. I think the first thing I did was I sent out a little survey and just said, hey, what do you desire? I'd like to start meeting with you guys. What do you desire most from the group? And gosh, I do this every year. So I think the first one was like, get to know each other, grow in my relationship with Jesus, learn about parenting pastor's kids, so that. Well, overwhelmingly, the response was get to know each other. And I thought, that's what we're going to do. We're going to spend this whole first year getting to know each other. So I gave them dates once a month. I said, we're going to meet once a month. We're going to get to know each other. We're going to play games. We're going to eat. We're going to talk. We're going to pray for each other. And we're just going to get to know each other. And they were like, okay. And they came. And not all of them came. But a lot came. And you know what we started to realize is the same thing. Gosh, we have a lot in common. And gosh, these ladies are fun. I can't believe I never knew them. Oh my goodness, we have kids the exact same age. I never even knew that. And then I surprised them and said, and guess what? So a few months in, I said, we're going on a retreat. Every year our husbands go on a pastor's retreat, we're going on a retreat. And so they were like, what does that even mean? And I was like, I don't even know. We're going to do it. And I had done it with our ladies in Florida. And I thought, no, we can do this. It's going to be great. So we went away for a couple of nights. And to me, this was probably a turning point that for here. So we'd only been meeting for about 8 or 9 months at the time. And we went away for a couple of nights together. A few of the ladies planned it. I really just showed up. I have a few that are so super good at that kind of thing. And I just kind of said, this is our budget and let's plan it and let's do it. And thankfully, Eric, my husband, really believes in this. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. But he really believes in pouring into these ladies and into our staff marriages. And so it was blessed, you know, by him and by our elders. And that weekend being away together, you know, when you're in a house with people, there's something different that happens, or even in, you know, hotel rooms or whatever it is. And that weekend, I believe that something different, something shifted a little bit where we got to hear each other's kind of more raw hearts. A lot of the ladies realized they deal with similar things, anxiety being one really big one. And so from that, that was kind of the end of our first year together. And so after that, I realized, okay, we got to switch gears. So beginning of our second year, I sent out another survey. This time, overwhelmingly, it was growing my relationship with Christ. So that year, we did a Bible study together and just, again, meeting once a month. So it's really spread out. But knowing these are the dates, I give them the dates for the whole year. I'm committing that we're going to meet. This is what we're going to do. We're going to pray for each other. And then I did something they didn't love, but they would still laugh. They would still to this day laugh and say, we didn't like that, but it was good for all of us. But I had each person that first year draw a name from whoever was there. They drew a name, or even people who weren't there. And they were responsible for that month of contacting that person, just chit-chat, somehow getting together with them. They could get together with them for coffee. They could get together with, you know, with their husbands and have dinner. They get together with kids at a park. But in that month, so if I had drawn your name, Christine, it would have been my responsibility to reach out to you, to contact you. And that was really uncomfortable for a lot of people, I came to find out, because they're like, we don't know. I didn't know her. However, relationships really did develop through that. And so just easing people out of their comfort just a little bit, I think it was helpful. So serving them by meeting once a month. Now we do a few other things now. We do things with the kids too, but which I love, is my favorite thing. But we also, every month, whoever has birthdays that month, this is a really simple thing you can do. So like tonight, I have one of these. So any January birthdays, I take all January birthdays either to lunch or to dinner. They get to decide. And at that birthday, dinner, lunch, whatever, then we just spend time together. We just spend time, we talk. And that kind of gets a more eclectic group, because our group is large. Then, you know, it's usually no more than 3 or 4 birthdays for that month. And so it's sometimes it's people that hang out and sometimes it's not. So it gets a more of an eclectic group together. And I think that that's fun. So just recognizing, hey, it's your birthday. I want to celebrate you. And I give them a little gift, that is, again, blessed by our staff, by our elders. And so I think just in that way, is how I serve. I think I probably answered both of your questions. Did I?
Yeah. Which is great. I love it. Okay. Do you consider this to be your primary ministry at the church?
You know, probably, this, along with our elder wives. And I do want to say, Christine, I was already doing pastor's wives. And I want to say this so that no one listening feels like this huge responsibility of like, gosh, I can't do that. I don't have time. I've almost always worked full time in our marriage. I'm not right now, but I was already doing meeting with and spending time with our pastor's wives and kids. And about a year ago, a little over a year ago, our elders felt that it was really important for our elder wives to have something similar. And we have an elder board, but we have about 160 elder wives.
Oh, wow.
So our elder board is small. It's only seven. But so they kind of just said, hey, we think this is really important. Would you be willing to do it? So I am actually on staff part-time, very part-time, to be able to do this. So I think it's important for people that are hearing this, like, I don't have time to do all this. You really may not. Like, I have time at this season of my life because things look a little different for me right now. Yeah. So definitely no pressure. I mean, I think when I did less, it was still super fruitful. Super
fruitful. I mean, sometimes just anything, you know,
anything.
You know?
Exactly.
And you can scale down, you know, listeners, you can scale down what Kay is saying. You can take one thing and just say, I'm going to remember people's birthdays.
Exactly. And send a card. You know, I think if you were going to start somewhere, if you're listening and have like a desire to start somewhere, I would say a monthly gathering is pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, we take turns meeting at each other's houses. My house is always available. We eat, we always share prayer requests and pray for each other and check up on each other throughout the month. You know, you don't have to do a Bible study together. You don't have to do any of those things together. Mm-hmm. We're doing a book club type of thing right now, and that's very simple, but you don't have to do any of that. I think mm-hmm. it's just the being together that is beneficial.
And it's also creating pathways when something does come up that I know I can go to Kay because she's kind of made this path for me.
Yeah.
Because I think if we don't have anything, we aren't cultivating relationships. What I have found in my own life and what I think a lot of pastors' wives deal with is insecurity that mm-hmm. we think, like you talked about earlier, the mold. It's like, I got to be this, but I'm not that. Right. And I feel like I'm the only one who's not that. Everyone's got it figured out. And so it's almost harder to get pastors' wives to open up with each other than it is to get non-pastors' wives to open up to each other. Do you know what I mean?
I think you're right. And I think a little bit, I think that's sad.
I do too.
There was a research study done by, I'm pretty sure it was Lifeway Research a few years ago. And it broke my heart, but it looked at different groups of people in the church. So, you know, singles ministry, women's ministry, you know, whatever. And it found that the loneliest group is pastors' wives. And that broke my heart. But I know it's true because there's something that whether we've been told this, I was never told you have to be careful. You have to quit. You can't really have friends, Kay. I was never told that. Mm-hmm. But I got burned a couple times. Mm-hmm. And that is what told me that. You know, that told me, and I like to have lots of friends. But as far as like being careful, you know, that there's truth in that. You know, we do have to be somewhat careful in who we trust. And I found that almost always the first people that want to be my friends when I move somewhere are the people that are not going to be my friends because there's a reason they want to be my friend so quickly. Yeah. And I kind of hate to say that, but it's a, you know, moving here, Jesus gave me a caution. And I started reading back through John and I got to chapter 2. I mean, I barely got into it. And it talks about, I'm going to majorly paraphrase this, but it said that Jesus trusted no one because he knew what was in the heart of a man. And I thought, whoa, if Jesus, God of the universe, trusted no one because he knew what was in the heart of a man, what does that mean for me? What does that mean for me? And so I started praying, Lord, show me specific people I can trust. And if you don't tell me I can trust them, I still want to be friends. I want to be kind and friendly and all those things, but I'm going to be a little more guarded with my words. And he was really good to do that. Does that mean there's been no pain? Nope. There's definitely been pain. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think with pastors' wives, something has told us, and maybe it's they've been burned in the past, or maybe if someone said, you can't tell stuff, which is true to a certain extent, but that we are sometimes really slow to open up. And I want them to know, and I'll tell you, Christine, this did not happen overnight. It mm-hmm. did not. I want them to know that Eric and I care about their marriage more than we care about their ministry.
Yeah.
And we both feel that way very strongly. You know, we believe that their ministry is going to be stronger when their marriage is stronger. We believe the greatest gift they can give their kids is a happy marriage. You know, we really believe that. And so spending time with our staff couples and just saying, hey, we care more about you as a person than we care about you as a staff member. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think they believe that right away. I think it takes time of seeing, you know, them coming back to us with an issue and us saying, okay, let's work through it. Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk through it. What can we do? You know, I think it takes time of us not responding and being like shaking our finger in their face for them to believe, hey, we actually love you for you. We love you as a person. We love you for who God's made, created you to be. And so I think that walls start dropping as that happens, but it takes time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think another thing is differences.
Yeah.
The women are vastly different in just their life context, but also the way they approach ministry. Definitely. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that of how do you help women cultivate relationship with differences in mind? And you also help them to know that that's okay. Who they are is good.
And you mean differences just like as far as like personality. More introverted?
Yeah.
I will tell you, our group is so diverse. So any 1 month, we'll have about 25 women come. And that's, you know, up and down as far as who can come different months. We are really different. I mean, it's almost comical sometimes at how different we are. However, I have watched these ladies really learn to love and value each other. And again, I think that just takes time. But it also takes when someone responds in a certain way, no one else making them feel like you big loser. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, that there is none of that. There will be none of that. And so, you know, as the person leading the group, I think you kind of facilitate and set the boundary for that. I was reminding our women going into Christmas services, we only had 9 services this year. That's not that many. You know, we had like 16 last year because of COVID. So I was like, it's just 9, guys. It's just 9. But the night we met for our Christmas party, I said, I want us to talk about going into this season because many of us have small children. Let's talk about, I personally am excited to go to all 9 services. I realize that I am by far, there's probably no one else in this room who feels like I do. And they all laughed. I'm like, yeah, nobody else feels like that. So, and I know that. And so I said, so let's talk about how we're going to make this season not a I have to, but an I get to season for both us, our husbands, and our kids. And I just reminded them of the verse in James, and there's a verse in Proverbs that mirrors it that says, your words tell your heart how to feel. And so if we're going to go forward, if we're going to start this conversation with I can't believe my husband's not going to be home this time, and I'm going to be doing this all by myself and blah, 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 blah. It's going to be a horrible Christmas and, you know, we're probably all going to get sick and, you know, all these things. If we're going to if that's going to be our conversation, then you are already telling your heart how to feel about this entire season. So we are not going to do that. We are going to start with a posture of I get to, not I have to. And I said, and if you're not there yet, then let's talk later. You know, let's talk later. And I said, but I want to help you get there. And so I said, but let's be honest. And, you know, again, we've been together for a while now. And I think that, so some of our more introverted women, I was so pleased that night. They said things like, I'm going to attend one service. My kids are going to serve with me at one service. That's it. I am not putting the pressure on myself to do any more than that. And I was like, yes, that's awesome. That is awesome. And then another one was like, you know, my kids are going to serve alongside my husband while I stay home by myself. And I'm like, great, that's perfect. You go to one service, that's all you have to do. And then there were, you know, those who, you know, were so excited about, you know, so it's just, again, it was a difference in personality, a difference in how they were going to relate. I think that the key to that is recognizing that we all bring something really beautiful to the table. And if we were all the same, it'd be a mess. It would be an absolute mess. We're really big here on using like our strength finders and that type of deal and just kind of knowing who you're dealing with and realizing I'm not here to change you. I'm here to appreciate how God has created you. And so I think just little things like that, I think it's just little things like that over time.
Yeah. And I think you saying those, the things that you just said, you're creating a culture where we can celebrate one another and the differences.
Absolutely.
And there's not an expectation.
Absolutely.
And I was even thinking about that when you said that some women don't come. Some women come, some maybe they miss a month. So I'm wondering how you communicate that with them, that this is not an expectation of your husband's job, that you attend this. How do you, how do you communicate that?
Gosh, I love that you asked that. I was just having this conversation with Eric a couple of days ago about, I said, going into this year, I'm going to remind our women once again, this is not a 2-for-1 deal. We've never hired someone and said, oh, we think you're great. And it's even better because we're also getting your wife. Now, you do obviously want supportive wives who want to be in ministry and, you know, love their husband, what their husband gets to do. But it's never your husband's on staff and therefore you are too, you know, kinda, you know, it's never that, never. It is and again, I remind them of this. This is what I was just telling Eric I was going to remind them of. I want you to be like every other church member. I want you to attend a service. You know, we as a church want you to attend a service because it's good for your heart. We want you to be in a life group because it's good for your heart. We want you to find a ministry that you love serving in because it's good for your heart. So I would tell any woman I meet anywhere who's a part of our church, those are the three things I want for you. So I'm going to tell our staff wives the exact same thing, the exact same thing. Then just reminding them, Christine, I feel like I remind them every year. And again, I'm really reminding myself of this too, if I'm being honest. You know, there are scriptures that talk about elders' wives and what's expected of leadership. And so that definitely applies to us. You know, we want to be women who aren't slanderers and who are full of the Spirit and all those things. But there is not the Bible does not speak about pastors' wives. You know, there is not a passage that said, as a pastor's wife, you are supposed to do da 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 da. It doesn't say that. It does say what the Bible expects of us as a godly wife and a godly woman. And so I think that when we drop those expectations a bit, there is a freedom that is truly beautiful that they get. You know what? I think we just enjoy ministry more when we're not living under an expectation.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Somebody told me recently that the biggest gift I can give our church is just my presence.
Love that.
Meaning not just being there, but being present. Being present with people.
Yep.
And anytime I've had the opportunity to go visit other churches, other times, when I've interacted with the service, the pastor, the pastor's wife, I'm not thinking, what are they doing? I'm thinking, how are they engaging me? I'm not even evaluating how they're engaging me, but I'm experiencing them. And there are times where you just feel so cared for just because they're present with you. So I have to remind myself of that sometimes. The greatest gift I can give is my presence.
I love that. I love that. If you're someone who's at a church with multiple services, that can actually even be a little daunting because you think, do I really have to go to the 8:30 a.m. service? You know, I mean, like, I don't want to go to the 8:30 a.m. service. And you know what? I don't go to the 8:30 a.m. service. I don't put that pressure on myself. But when I'm there, I am present. I think that's really good. Well, I love that she said that. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to talk about something a little bit different than personality because this whole COVID season has brought out everyone's opinions and preferences and ideas and all of that. And it's affected staff relationships. People have different ideas of how things should be handled or, you know. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that, especially just thinking about pastors' wives who aren't making the decisions, but who are affected by the decisions and sometimes have to answer questions about the decisions, but then also interacting with one another and having differences. Can you speak to that?
You know, this has been by far the weirdest season of ministry.
It has.
Ever.
It has.
Ever. I mean, I don't know if anyone wouldn't agree with that. You know, there's a, I just read a study that said, this was crazy. I think it was 85, it may have been higher. 85% of pastors say they want to change jobs. Like not just quit ministry, but go to a different church, you know, which, you know, what's funny about that is it's the same.
I know.
It's the same. And so, but that just be, I think that just shows that we have been beat up a little bit in this season.
Yeah.
And boy, have we been beat up, you know, I mean, I'm going to answer your question, but first I want to say this, because if you're listening out there and you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, this has been too, I get it. I mean, you are not alone. You, some of our closest friends in ministry who don't serve at our church, but you know, around the country, I've heard them say the exact same thing. And we sat across the table from someone that I just respect so much. And he said, I don't think I want to do this anymore. Like I am beat up. So just please know that that is a normal response to this crazy time we're living in. And at the same time, yes, you, Eric said, he had a little quote on his Instagram that said, if you want to make everyone happy, go sell ice cream. No. If you want to be a leader, if you want to make everyone happy, go sell ice cream. Don't be a leader. It's not a fun time to be a leader. I mean, it's just not. So people have differing opinions. Just when you think that, okay, we're all going to get on the same page now, a new topic to disagree on pops up. I live in California. I mean, I probably don't have any more topics than anyone else, but it sure feels like I do. I mean, there's just a lot. So to answer your question, the weekend that everything shut down here, which was in March, I think it was like 12, 13, something like that.
It was
2020.
Well, for us, it was the 11th because it was my 20 year wedding anniversary, March 11th, 2000. I know.
You'll never forget that.
Never forget it.
That might be the same day it was here. I just remember that we had a pastor's wives gathering set up. We always meet on Sunday afternoons from 4 to 7. That's kind of our given time. It used to be 5 to 7, but that wasn't long enough. So now we do it 4 to 7. But we had one set up to happen that weekend. And there was the dilemma of, do we cancel it? Do we not? And things hadn't technically been shut down yet. It might have even been the weekend before. And I said, no, we're going to do it. Let's do it. Now, at that point, I thought we were just going to flatten the curve, right? 14 days to flatten the curve. I mean,
no.
What was that about? And so so we met. And that night, Christine, it was so interesting. I didn't expect this, but a lot of people came. We have in our group two doctors. We have an attorney. We have, you know, some holistic medicine people. We have a quite a diverse group. Teachers who are, you know, their lives being thrown out of whack too. And so that night we sat there and some people had on masks, some people didn't have on masks. And I looked around the room and thought, uh-oh, we're going to need to address this. And so that night we just talked about it. And I remember us saying, okay, guys, we have no idea what we're going into, hopefully just a couple of weeks. We have a lot of differing opinions in this room. What are we going to do about it? And at this point, our church hadn't really pivoted in a huge way yet. We did very soon after, but we hadn't come out and said, we're going to do this yet, because we didn't even know we were being shut down.
Right.
And so, but that night I remember sitting there and us saying, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to have different opinions? You know, and at some point someone, and it wasn't me, said, and I thought it was so wise. She said, you know, I think that we just choose right now to respect each other's opinions. And I remember us looking around and thinking, well, of course we're going to respect each other's opinions. We have no idea what that even means at the time. And that came to mean a lot. So that little quote came up a bunch of times, you know, over the past year and a half, almost 2 years now, that we've said, you know, we're going to choose to respect each other's opinions. We started gathering again. Oh gosh, the timeline's such a blur now. I remember our retreat got canceled. It was supposed to be in April. We had to cancel that. And then that was such a bummer. And then I think we maybe met in June, but we were outside. We met outside. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said, if you don't feel comfortable, then, you know, don't come. Oh, we did people were going crazy with their kids at home. And, you know, pastor's kids is another thing I'm really passionate about. Maybe even my most passionate thing. And I found that you could get a snow cone truck really cheap because they had no business. So I rented a snow cone truck And
that's a great idea.
Ask them to come to the parking lot of the church. And I told all our pastors, pastors' kids, pastors' wives, everybody, all the families. I said, hey, we're going to stagger this. Come get snow cones. Hang out at a distance if you want, if you want. That was probably one of the smartest things we did, because it was able to, you know, they were able to get out of the house, but still be outside safe distance, eating their own little snow cone, you know, whatever. So have there been differing opinions on staff? Of course, there's going to be differing opinions about everything. I think I really credit Eric for how smoothly this has gone. He's given really clear direction and guidance, and not just said, here's what we're going to do, but given our pastors, this is the why behind what we're choosing to do. I think when we've respected the women who are like, I'm just not comfortable being there. Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Totally get it. You don't have to be comfortable right now. Yeah. Lots of people aren't comfortable right now.
Yeah.
So just respecting opinions, I think.
That's good. Well, have you ever had a situation where you've had a conflict with another staff wife? And how did you navigate that? Can you think of a time? Because I do think that happens sometimes, and it's a little bit, it stays under the radar because it has to, which is good. I mean, if we want to honor one another, it doesn't come out. But how can we navigate conflict with other staff wives?
You know, if I have had anything big, I've chosen to forget it, because nothing's coming to mind right away. I have seen conflict between two wives that I've kind of had to.
Can you speak to that? How did you help them navigate it?
Gosh, it's been, I think, to be honest, I think I've seen more of it during COVID than any other time. Yeah. And it probably started off truthfully with a difference of opinion, and they just weren't able to get on the same page. You know, there's a few rules that I just kind of live by. It's based on a 2 Corinthians passage where Paul disappoints the Corinthian church by saying, I'm going to come visit you on my way to Macedonia. And then the Holy Spirit tells him, nope, they have some stuff they need to take care of. You can't go right now. And so he doesn't go. And from that passage, there's like 5 things that I read a Kay Arthur book one time that she says that you do. And first, you have a clear conscience. So I kind of went through this with both of them. You know, do you have a clear conscience? Is there anything you need to apologize for? You need to ask forgiveness from the Lord, ask forgiveness from each other. Okay. Godly confrontation is biblical. You know, you go to the person with a pure heart, you know, with a gracious spirit. That's a third one. Fourth one is you realize you can't change the person. So, but here's the bottom line. If it's a relationship worth fighting for, and it is, because when we're on staff together, we are family. This is family. You do not just cut off a family member. That's how I believe anyway. I think that I have said to both, this is a relationship worth fighting for. Fight for it. Mm-hmm. Fight for it. Humble yourself and fight for the relationship. And then I kind of had to back out a little bit. I was willing to be the person sitting with them and negotiating, but they didn't really need that. They really more needed to just be told, fight for the relationship. You know, it's not wrong to confront, fight for the relationship. I can kind of remember when I was younger having some, I don't know if I would call them really conflicts, but just like just not seeing eye to eye with some other women on our staff, and just going to them and saying, hey, are we okay? Like, things seem kind of weird between us. Like, this is going to affect, you know, our husbands. This is going to affect a lot of things. Let's get stuff right. Sometimes it went really well. Sometimes it didn't go really well. I actually can think of two right now. I couldn't think of them at the beginning, but I can think of them now. One did not end well. It did not. She kind of wrote me off, to be completely honest, and I had to be okay with that. At this point, we weren't on staff together anymore, so it wasn't as big a deal. To this day, I really don't know why, Christine. I really don't know what set that into motion, but I have to just believe that I had a clear conscience. I went to her in love, and you have to move on. I think when you are serving with people, the biggest thing is, if you have a conflict with another wife, you really do need to make it a priority to get it right, because it will affect your husband.
Yes. That's what I was kind of thinking about is sometimes I know I can influence my husband.
Of course.
About how he views people he works with, mm-hmm. and the spouse.
Of course. Of course.
I think sometimes we can tell ourselves, oh, it's not a big deal because I'm not on staff and, you know, these aren't my coworkers. And you're saying it's a big deal. And I do think it's a big deal as well, because I really feel like the enemy can get in specifically through our relationships with other women on the staff wives. Don't you think?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that if he can't do anything else, he's going to try to break unity in the body.
Yeah.
And unity in the body happens a lot of times through really dumb stuff. Really dumb stuff can break our unity. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to be on guard. I mean, you know, enemies are prowling around just looking for who we can devour. I think that if we're not careful, we can be the stimulus of setting something really bad into motion that we don't even mean to.
Yeah.
So I think just being on guard, watching it. I will say this though, when you're praying for the women on your staff, and because we meet monthly and know what they need us to pray for, when you're praying for someone, it's really hard to stay upset with them.
That's true.
It's really hard. So I think one thing that I've felt the Lord tell me to do, and an older, wiser woman told me this, that when you have someone who's really getting on your last nerve, which happens, that you just commit that every time you think about them, you're going to pray for them. And you're going to realize how often you think about them, number one. and you're probably not going to like it, but it's going to soften your heart. Mm-hmm. It's going to soften your heart. So I think that that's
good.
An important thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's not current issues, but in the past I've struggled with other staff wives because of me, not because of
totally.
Them. You know, yeah, it's me like, too. I'm comparing myself to her. She's different than me and she's awesome. And I'm not her and I'm not like that. And people respond so well to her. And so my issues came from me comparing
and that
kind of thing. But I think what you've said about relationships, having relationships, you see them as a whole person. You see what they struggle with too, but then you develop more of a heart and a compassion for them and want to, as Romans 14 says, upbuild them. You want to champion them.
That's right. That's right. You want to see them succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a teacher. So my dad was this kind of goes into me loving pastor's kids a little bit, but if you want to talk about that, we can. But
I want to talk. That's what I was going to ask you next.
Okay, good. Okay. I'll kind of tie this into the pastor's wife thing too. But my dad was my principal for a while, which was sort of terrible. I got in a lot of trouble for talking. But my mom managed the school cafeteria. Greatest job ever for a kid's mom to have. You know, you get the best piece of chicken and all that kind of stuff. But so for several years of my life, I'm the youngest of five. And we were at school all the time. So I was at school before school. I was at school after school. I was at school on teacher work days. I was at school over summer. I was just at school all the time. And I realized that my parents were so smart. How did they do this? I love school. I literally just said to Eric a few days ago, I miss teaching so much. And he's like, okay, how are you going to go back to teaching right now? And I'm like, I don't know. But I even love the way school smells. Like, I love school. So I started thinking that my parents, of the five of us, three of us went into education. And so somehow they raised these kids who were at school all the time, yet were not bitter at the school, who loved the school. So that's kind of where my passion for pastor's kids comes from. But let me circle back to that and say this. You know how as a parent, when you know a teacher really loves your child,
uh-huh.
like you know they're crazy about your kid, when they come to you and say, Christine, you know, your child's name, you know, I love him so much. But he is not doing a good job of listening when I give directions. You know, because you know the teacher loves your child, you're going to say, thank you for telling me. Your response is going to be different than if it were a teacher who's on your kid nonstop about little nitpicky things. If she comes to you and says that, you know, you're more likely just to roll your eyes and say, here's just another thing you're complaining about.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the same way when you approach another pastor's wife. If they already know you deeply love them and care about their well-being, when you approach them and say, hey, you know, blah, 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 their response is going to be different than if you've never had a conversation with them before, or if your only conversations that you've had have been negative.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, true. So that answers, you know, that question. Now back to the kid part.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You know, this is probably my favorite part of what I do. No, it's for sure my favorite part. I love the kid part. The Lord put this burden on my heart. He gave me like this illustration of school a few years ago, before we came to Mariners, actually. He gave me this vision of like, if it's possible for teachers and principals to raise kids who like love the school, then why is it not possible for pastors and pastors' wives to raise kids who are crazy about Jesus in the church? And I thought, yeah, why not? Why isn't that? Because, you know, I don't know about you, but from the time I had kids, you know, to now, even people, oh yeah, you gotta be really careful with the pastor's kids, you know, make sure they don't hate the church and aren't bitter at the church and all these things. And I just thought that doesn't have to be true. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be true. And so I started talking to Eric about this a while back and saying, you know, I want to invest in a generation of pastor's kids. And so coming to Mariners, I started thinking like, what is that going to look like? And we have kids, you know, our kids span the age, you know, range here. And so I didn't know what it was. I realized just like the wives, the kids didn't know each other, which is so sad because there are so many in the same age bracket with the same interest. And they have a huge thing in common, which is that their parents serve the church and love the church and love Jesus. And so Eric and I, the first idea was let's gather all the kids. We had only been here a couple months when we did this. Let's gather all the kids and take them Christmas shopping for their parents.
Ooh.
And it was so fun, but I made a big mistake. I didn't tell the parents. I thought it'd be really fun if we took the church buses and took them to Target, but I didn't tell the parents we were taking their kids off campus. So I'm talking, I had little kids that needed car seats. Didn't worry about that.
Oh, no.
And so we left, like, I think we took four and above, ages four and above. The parents came, dropped off their kids. We gave them a gift to go on a date. So a monetary gift to go on a date. And then we took some of our elders, helped us, and we loaded all these kids onto buses and we gave them cash. We didn't give them the money. We said, you have this much money to buy your mom and dad a Christmas gift and you can buy whatever you want, anything you want. And man, they bought some of the most hilarious things. And we just let them do it. And then we checked out, brought them back to church and wrapped gifts with them, put their mom and dad's name on them. And when their parents picked them up, they had a gift to give their parents for Christmas.
That's so cute.
And so that was our first thing. But one thing that happened that night that was like, yes, that's what I want to do. Yes, that's it, is Eric gathered all the kids and he said, I want you to know how much we love your parents.
Mm.
And your mom, your dad, or your mom works so hard here. And I want to tell you why this is such a special job that Jesus has called them to. And that he doesn't need us, but he's choosing to use us. And we love your parents. And I remember that night, Eric said to the kids, he said, if you are ever in trouble, we want you to know that you can come to me and Miss Kay, not just to your parents. And so that was kind of a night of like, there was a big shift that happened just that night. And so then I soon realized, oh boy, we got to keep doing these events. So we do things with the kids multiple times a year. Sometimes we invite their parents to stay. Sometimes we tell their parents to get out of here.
No way.
Mm-hmm. But the goal, is to raise this generation of pastors' kids who know that we love their parents, who know that we appreciate their parents, and who know that they are loved deeply by the church, deeply by the church. We had a big scavenger hunt at church last summer where we hid things in all the places at church that every kid wants to go but isn't allowed.
Oh,
and they were allowed to go in all the places.
That is so fun.
Yep. We're going to have a sleepover at church when COVID's finally over. But, you know, Eric and I both really firmly believe that the greatest gift we can give these kids is their parents to have a healthy marriage. So we want to pour into that marriage and help the wife and the husband not to be bitter at the church for all the time the church can sometimes take, but instead to know how loved you are by the church. And then too, when dad has to go to 9 Christmas services, instead of the child feeling like, oh, my dad's gone again, the kid's more likely to be like, hey, can I go with you? Or I get it. Like, the church loves my dad. My dad loves the church. And so it's just change. It's really just a major shift in mindset that we're trying to do with these kids. And I can say after a little over three years, I am seeing some of the coolest things. Like, the most recent thing we did was the shopping thing again, because it was December, of course. And these kids, even the parents noticed it too. They cannot wait to be together. I mean, and these kids don't see each other on a daily basis, but they cannot wait to be together. They love being together. They love hanging out. They can't wait for their parents to leave. So just really changing. You know, our kids are still young, so the jury's still out. You know, I mean, we're just hoping and praying that the Lord does something great. You know, our heart is to raise kids who love Jesus and love His church and know the church loves them. Know the church loves them.
I love this because I can envision it like a ripple effect that, and I've seen this in my own life. Our church is much smaller, with much smaller staff, but the ripple effect of when we love each other.
Yeah.
It gives the church a sense of security.
Absolutely. That
there's unity among the leadership. And so we can all take a deep breath, you know?
Oh, Christine, that is so true. I'll tell you a perfect example of that. When I had sent a little survey out to the kids and said, what's something you've always wanted to do at church? And they, big, vast majority was they wanted to swim in our outdoor baptistry. And so in California, you know, it's outside and it's big. It's like a small pool. And so, you know, I said to Eric and I are in a really unique situation, is that we followed a pastor and his wife who'd been here for 40 years.
Wow.
And part of the deal with coming was we really wanted him to stick around, because there's a lot of wisdom in having been here for 40 years, right? Yeah. So he's our pastor emeritus, what we call him. So he's still around. They're so good to us, he and his wife. But they don't want to be in charge anymore. You know, they don't want to be in charge.
Right.
So I said to Eric, I want to fill the baptistry and heat it for these kids to swim in. And he was like, okay, I think we should do it. And I was like, I feel like I should ask somebody permission, but I want to ask someone who's going to say yes. And so I asked Kitten, the guy that we followed. I said, hey, what do you think about? And he's like, oh yeah, you do it. Totally do it. So we fill the baptistry, put floats in it, heat it, have a taco truck. We've done this 3 times now. This was the first time we did it. And the kids, I mean, they just had the best time. And so Eric put a picture of it on his Instagram. And I'm not really on social media very, I'm terrible on social media, so I don't really get on there very often. So I didn't see this, but, you know, most people in our church are like, that's the coolest thing ever. All the staff kids, you know, together playing, blah, blah, blah. Of course, we had a few who were like, you know, you're demeaning the baptistry. And, you know, Eric's like, it's water. It's a pool of water. You know, that is not, the Spirit of Jesus does not live in that water, you know? And so it was, but most people absolutely, and I still hear about this, like, they love seeing our staff and staff kids together having fun. And I think you're exactly right. I think it gives our congregation a sense of, you know, it's kind of like kids who, when they see their parents are getting along well, they have a sense of security. Exactly. I think it does the same thing, the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's an authentic, it's like, oh, this is an authentic demonstration. Yeah. Of what God is asking us to do, to love Him and to love one another.
That's right.
And I can see
that's
it.
Right.
So
that's right.
Kate, this is so, I've loved talking to you, and I hope that, you know, we don't all have gigantic churches like you guys are at, but we can take some of what you've said and we can take a little nugget and run with it. And that's what gets me excited. Even for my own staff and elder wives, I'm thinking, we do some things, but I'm like, oh, these are great ideas. And I want to implement some things going forward. So thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Yes. And I do want to throw this out there. If there's anyone out there who just wants some ideas, they can totally message me on Instagram, and I'll be happy to give you guys anything I have, any idea we've done that worked. Of course, I don't check my Instagram very often, but I'll try to remember. I will try to remember to do that.
That's awesome.
I love that you do this podcast, Christine. It's a real gift. It's a real gift to pastors' wives for sure.
Well, thanks. And thanks for joining me.
Yes, thank you.
Kay and I touched on a lot of things in this episode, but I know many of you aren't at large churches and many of you aren't senior pastors' wives. So I want you to know that I am planning a second conversation about relationships with pastors' wives with a woman whose husband is not the primary leader and who serves at a smaller church. So stay tuned for that. Thanks so much for listening to By Faith, friends. Join me next week as I talk with Greg Ogden for the first in one of my how-to episodes I'll be doing this spring. Greg tells us how we can make disciples who make disciples. He has been a significant influence in my own ministry, so I can't wait to share this conversation with you. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.